From the Carter Subaru Studios, this is the Jack and Spike Show.
Welcome to the Jack and Spike Show. Earthquake in New York City. Who cares? Apparently everybody. Washington State takes a surprising turn to the right, but it's really not that surprising given what the initiatives are. It's actually just kind of what people do, but, you know, narratives are always fun. Kurt Cobain's legacy continues. It's always weird for me to talk about Kurt Cobain in a public setting, because as a musician, not to be like, I knew Kurt better than you did, but right. As someone who is as a musician, it's almost like it was deeply influenced by Kurt Cobain.
Yeah.
It's always kind of weird to talk about it in a public setting because I feel like I have a different understanding.
I'd love to hear it. I think that's got real value.
We shall discuss at great length, but before we get to all that, why does everybody care about New York City so much? I just don't. It's a 4.8 magnitude earthquake. It struck northern New Jersey, and all of a sudden everybody's like, oh, no, oh, no. Meanwhile, there's that other one in Taiwan that was like a 7.8
or
whatever.
And they're still digging people out from building collapse.
Right. Yeah. So I'm not terribly impressed with this. I do think it goes to show how kind of sick our media is for headlines, for clickbait, for attention-grabbing headlines.
Yeah, but 4.8's no nothing. It's not a nothing burger, right? Nobody was dropped. You're
nothing
right.
Nothing burger. Big old nothing burger.
Is that, you think it is?
I'm from California, dude. A 4.8. Well, I don't even get out of bed for a 4.8.
Given that we just had a Pacific Rim activity on the the left side of the Pacific Rim, I thought it'd be us.
No.
I thought it'd be us or California.
No. This is what media does because Fridays are always slow news days.
Oh, it's true.
And so what you got to do is you got to pick the one story that's like kind of attention grabbing, but doesn't really have any real implications in it. And then you make it a big deal.
No subway disruption in New York. No trains off the rails.
Not a single thing. Not a single bad coffee from a bodega spilled.
A guy fell off a bike. That's in the story.
That was a big deal. So anyway, in local news, fiscal conservatives are winning, according to Scott Walker, who's the president of the Young Americas Foundation and served as the 45th governor of Wisconsin. He wrote this piece in the Washington Times talking about how basically there's been a cultural shift in Washington state, how more people are voting for initiatives or ballot measures or whatever it might be that we could consider to be right-wing in nature.
Yeah.
And so he does this really interesting thing where he talks about, you know, the leaders of the conservative group, Let's Go Washington, pumping a bunch of money into the state to try to get people to sign up for these ballot initiatives.
Yeah, yeah.
But, you know, you guys know that I've studied political theory for many, many years. And what this looks like to me in terms of the ballot initiatives that are being put forth and the fiscal conservatives coming out of the woodwork, this is just kind of a regression to the meme. Does that make sense?
To the meme? Okay.
So we just kind of naturally regress as a country. We're a center-right country. Mm-hmm. And no matter what a bunch of blue-haired lesbians on college campuses say, we always kind of filter back over to that space.
Yeah, that makes sense.
My analysis of this is not so much that it's this huge conservatives taking control. As much as it is people being like, yeah, I don't really want to spend any money on carbon tax, and I don't really want to...
It'd be nice if cops could chase criminals.
I mean, those aren't really like right wing or left wing ideas. That's just kind of like kind of American ideas, which is like, maybe can we let cops like chase criminals again? And like, I don't really want my gas to be $4 a gallon. That's just kind of an American way of approaching these issues. But Scott Walker has got to make a narrative out of it by saying, yeah, all this big corporate money is now changing the landscape because of corporate hoo-ha and whatnots. It's a little disingenuous when in actuality, I think the job of the commentariat is to say, this is what we see happening within our region.
And then
you can vote accordingly. It doesn't have to be this right-left binary that so many people are kind of sickeningly obsessed with.
Well, it's a course correction, as is often almost always the case in political. We swing wildly to one extreme or the next. And like you said, we find that right-center medium. Always we it'd be like if someone said sailboater takes hard left turn to Europe as he's just kind of tacking back into the wind a little bit to stay on a straight course. Right.
Let me give you a quick example. This is, again, what Scott Walker wrote in The Washington Times. He says, thankfully, Brian Haywood took charge and invested millions in Let's Go Washington, period. Next sentence. The grassroots effort collected 800,000 signatures to get the issues on the ballot. Does not compute.
Does he know how grass works?
Non sequitur. That's not the way that works, right?
Wow.
If I dump millions into my garden, maybe grass will grow. Grassroots means that it happens organically, yeah, not by injecting a bunch of cash into it,
Scott
Walker.
This is an AstroTurf movement.
This is what they call it in political theory. We would say that this is AstroTurf.
Oh, that's really the term?
That's really the term.
Oh, look at that.
So when big corporate money or when big donors come in, we call it AstroTurfing.
Okay.
It's kind of a joke within political theory circles. But
so true, though.
It is so true. So what Scott Walker's is, it's like a weird... It's kind of a 1984-esque revision of what's actually happening in the state. Now, if it was, we could analyze what's actually happening in the state, is there's been one too many people who have been injured by a lack of police presence.
Mm-hmm.
There's been one too many people who've been killed by a lack of police presence. And so people, although they might have a D or an I on their ballot, they are going to vote for things which Scott Walker is calling right wing, but I think as you adequately kind of diagnose, is just kind of going back to the common sense of
course
of it.
Correction.
Right.
It's common sense is the word. It's the word.
Right. Yeah. Like, so Spike, you're a crazy lib. You're a crazy leftist.
I am.
And I have never seen you more anti-government than when the whole gas stove thing was, or was it the gas? No, it was the water pump.
The elimination of natural gas as a heating source.
Yeah, exactly.
Right.
Exactly.
I don't want them reaching into every thermostat in the state. I don't want them putting poor people. I don't want to get on my high horse. Go ahead.
No, get on your high horse. Hey, man, get right up on that horse, man. You know, ride it all day long.
Let's go super green, even if it's going to cost the least able among us to absorb the hit. I mean, this is literally the super rich, you know, okay, we have to change, but we don't want to have any issues with it. Let's just make all the poor and the challenged, financially challenged, bear the brunt of all this cost, all this changeover from elimination of natural gas.
Right. So there are many issues out there which kind of transcend the right-left binary,
yes.
And I think it behooves us to identify those. Scott Walker goes on to write in this very long piece. He says, liberals never seem to give up. They kind of do, right? I mean, libs tend to give up, you know, like if it's like a sporting competition or like a, you know, like a...
Hey, man, every time I see somebody give a concession speech, I see a lib giving up, you know?
I saw Hillary Clinton give a pretty good concession speech.
Yeah.
Hey, I lost that one. He says, it's refreshing to see a group of conservatives decide that they will, too, never give up. Well, I mean, they technically will if those ballot initiatives don't go through. Technically, you are then giving up. Says, like our founding fathers, they face remarkable odds. Not really. I mean, I was looking at the polling on this.
Yeah.
Like the polling on this is like it's almost neck and neck on so many of these issues. And
yeah.
In some cases, like in the police pursuit, that initiative is like 70-30. So when you say like they face remarkable odds, not really, Scott Walker. Like you're kind of just wrong about that entirely, right?
Well, the privileged class of our founding fathers. You know, they did face incredible odds going against England, but not so much getting what they wanted put on paper for the rest of us to follow along with.
Yeah, yeah. All right, so Kurt Cobain passed away 30 years ago today.
30
years ago today. He took his own life, if you believe that story. Kurt Cobain, I think, as kind of a Pacific Northwest icon, I know he means a lot to a lot of different people. For me as a musician, one of the first guitar riffs I ever learned was a Nirvana riff. And when I look at Kurt Cobain as a person, I don't do the kind of rose-colored glasses things that people do with Kurt Cobain, where people kind of do this thing where they tend to paint him as being, I think it's the wrong way to paint someone who is a very complex figure.
Okay, because we're just the romanticized voice of a generation.
Voice of a generation.
Spoke to the unrepresented.
Spoke to the unrepresented.
Yeah, all those are true.
Yeah, and at the same time, you know, there's footage of him nodding out on heroin holding his 8-month-old baby.
Oh, yeah.
So I think that what we do with people like this who die in tragedy is we often tend to only look at the pieces that we like and make us feel good. And that's actually kind of disingenuous to the journey that Kurt Cobain was on throughout the course of his life.
Yeah.
And it in a way makes him something that he's not. Right? But we do this with James Dean, or we do this with any number of different people.
Hendrix, Morrison, you name it. Marilyn, you name it. Yeah, that's a self-preservation mechanism on our part though. Cuz we got to have heroes, we got to have somebody, a romanticized way to look back and put our faith in our, you know, Kurt Cobain is Seattle. Seattle, you know, Seattle, the weirdness that is Seattle.
Sure.
You know, all the little countercultures, all the grungers, all the gays, all the LGBTQs in Seattle. Kurt was their touchstone guy. He's our Elvis here in the Great Northwest. But You know, I don't think you get there as an artist, and I don't begin to understand how brilliance happens, but I know that suffering makes art.
That's part of it is a lot of like kind of natural discomfort with who you are in the world, and then having to try to manifest that in a way that you can communicate it to other people
and deal with it yourself by through your music. Well,
yeah,
right?
I don't think unfortunately for Kurt, I don't think he was ever really able to deal with it. Right? I don't think that
obviously not
either not the fame or feeling kind of awkward or ostracized or whatever it is. There's a really great documentary that was made about him about some of the tape recordings that he had, and they animated over the top. Of those.
Oh, I remember this. Yeah, the cassettes of him just taking notes, writing songs, that kind of thing.
Writing songs, yeah. Hanging out, taking phone calls, whatever it was. And I think that that's a much more accurate portrayal of an individual.
I would agree.
Because all too often what we do is we just listen to the music and then we just kind of walk away with good feelings. But like I was telling you earlier, if you watch the MTV Unplugged, which is like 2 hours long, only about 50 minutes of that is actual music. The rest of them is kind of tooling around, goofing off. You know what I mean?
Well, kind of Kurt jerking the chain of corporate radio, corporate music, right? MTV itself was the pinnacle in those days.
Exactly. Nick, do you have a favorite Cobain song since we can commemorate Nirvana today on the anniversary of his
death?
Well,
when I was growing up, I was in a few bands in high school and college, and we would cover Bleach, and we would cover, what was that one? In Bloom. That's
in
the
Bloom
other
was
one.
A
That's
great
a common
song.
One, yeah. One of the common chords you learn first.
Yeah, because it's kind of an easier riff to get your mind around, or easier chord progression to get your mind around. Laura, do you have a favorite Nirvana? Just commemorating the anniversary.
Come As You Are.
That's a good song.
That's a good one.
It's a good jam.
I got to tell you, I was on the air in Seattle the morning that the story broke that Kurt Cobain had taken his life.
What's your favorite Kurt song?
I have to say Come As You Are, going at, you know, or All Apologies, which I absolutely love.
Oh, wow.
But then, you know, how do you discount what Teen Spirit meant to music? And to the time in
yeah, we're all
city.
Trying to be cool.
No,
Steve Cut Nirvana songs.
I
Sounds like
you.
Teen Spirit is a great song.
And I'll have to tell you, Nirvana was probably my fourth favorite Seattle band in the 90s.
Sure.
I mean, and they're one of the greatest bands ever to put pen to paper and guitar to tape. I mean, Nirvana's one of the greatest bands of all flipping time.
And you know, ironically, one of the most played tunes on the radio that he performed unplugged was a David Bowie cover, The Man Who Sold the World. And it's arguably better than the original, but well, that's a different type of
discussion. I would say it's better than the original because the original is ponderous and boring. But yeah, so, you know, I read his daughter's message to her father
Francis,
today. She released it on her Instagram. I can't read it because I'll burst into tears, but if you want to go read
it today's release?
It's very powerful.
Oh, wow.
And it's very very well thought out and very earnest and very genuine. So if you want to go check out his daughter reminiscing about the relationship that she could have had with her father, I highly recommend you go see that. Youth homelessness in Washington dropped 40% in 6 years. I got a lot of pushback on the rant that I did on Monday when I said that I'm really tired of people saying that government bad all the time. I'm really tired of people saying that we're wasting money when it goes into this and that as a blanket statement, meaning that you can point out that there are some ways in which Washington State or King County or Pierce County or whatever, they waste money. But at the same time, you also have to acknowledge the things that are good that are going on within your state or within your county or whatever it is.
You're being honest, yeah.
If you're being
absolutely.
Honest, right? And all too often, I think what we run into with political commentators is they are only showing you one side of the data or half of the data or whatever it is.
Mm-hmm.
And they are not actually showing you the other side. And so when I saw this headline saying that 40% drop in homelessness from Washington youth in 6 years, that's a pretty good investment. That's a pretty good investment of your taxpayer dollars. What are some of these stats in here, Spike?
24,000 youth, people under 18, were living on the streets in Seattle between the ages of 12 and 24, actually, was the guideline.
Yeah.
And that's between 2016 and 2022 when they remeasured, the number had dropped to 14,000. Like you said, a 40% drop in the number of kids that were living on the street and kids who are people now who are still experiencing homelessness, dealing with mental health issues, addiction issues, got their start by being on the streets when they were younger. So this was literally fixing the problem before it came a problem that was infinitely more difficult to deal with and to fix and to treat these citizens. So, like you said, an investment.
Yeah.
Getting these kids help, getting them off the streets, getting them into foster situations, housing situations, rehab, back into the education system. How much? There's no way to tell how much that saved the city and the culture,
and
or how many people it saved.
That's my thought about it, man, is I really hate what we've done with the economics of poverty in the United States, where we put a dollar amount to a human life. I really despise it. And the reason is why is because we would never say that to someone that we know. We would never say that about someone that we love, right? We would never say that that person is only worth $100,000. I mean, I certainly...
No one with a heart would, right?
So when people do this thing where they say, like, we got lots of comments about this, or we'll tell you, people text in and they say, it's so wasteful. Look at all the words, homeless industrial complex, blah, 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 and they freak out about it. My thought is, how much time do they actually spend, I don't know, going to the Salvation Army and seeing that, like how you and I did when we went and we met all those alcoholics who were just trying to get their life together?
Yep.
How much time do the people actually spend looking into ways that the system is actually working or in a way that they can actually benefit the system? Not that much. Because government bad is the lowest threshold to understanding politics or government. When someone just goes around and says government bad all of the time, that is someone that has an absolute lowest threshold of your understanding of complex sociocultural or socioeconomic situations. When I look at this study, I look at these numbers, 10,000 less homeless people than there were 6 years ago. 10,000 less. 90%, what is it? 90% of them are still stably housed?
Yeah.
That's amazing.
And all it took was a less than a $2,000 investment in each of these young people that were living on the streets. They literally gave them cash infusions, which helped them transition into living situations or housing situations. So, I mean, what's it, 10,000 people at a cost of $2,000 each, that's $200,000. What would it cost today to help 10,000 people living on the streets, experiencing homelessness, experiencing addiction or whatever, or mental health issues? I mean, the number is... 10 to the magnitude of 10 to of 100.
By the way, did you mention where the money actually came from? It came from the Schultz Family Foundation. It's $1.1 million for the cash grants to Washington communities, right? So, I mean, like this, I mean, I think it goes to show that a lot of these things can actually be very, very successful in helping people. And money does cure a lot of things, and it most certainly can help out a decent amount of people. We'll take a really quick break when we get back. Terminally Online, more criticism. We have been criticized by somebody else in the media, and I won't stand for it, Spike. I'm outraged. Flame war. Drama.
Okay.
We've been criticized, and I'm going to be calling them out, and you're going to want to stick around because I'm going to say mean stuff, and I'm going to be really mean and over the top about this whole thing when we get back right after this.
The internet can be a dark and often dangerous place. Only one man has the courage to go where no sensible person would go. Jack Stein is terminally online.
Terminally online. Jack Stein does not sleep very well about four nights out of the week. And so he is both terminally and online when that does not happen. Do you know what I mean?
I hear you, brother. And I appreciate you taking one for the team because I couldn't do it.
So our good friend Sam Campbell came out with a piece this week. It's called In Plain Sight, and it basically covers We Heart Seattle and their various activities around King County. Mm-hmm. Spike, what would your estimation be on positive to negative criticism in the piece itself?
In the piece itself, I thought Sam did a really decent job of pointing out a few big questions that needed to be asked, but for the bulk of this piece, 80%, 85%, was talking about the work being done over the course of hundreds of thousands of trips into Seattle's homeless encampments.
Picking up trash.
Generation. I mean, year after year after year. When I say generations of trash, they're talking about campsites that had been used by different homeless groups for over periods of 15, 20 years. Yeah. So you're digging like archaeologists in these things. So, I thought the piece was pretty evenly played.
Yeah, and I helped Sam edit the piece, and I gave him my notes on it, my thoughts about it.
He worked on it for months.
Yeah, and he got a lot of pushback against it because people have warm feelings towards Andrea Suarez and towards We Heart Seattle. And for the last, like, I don't know, 3 or 4 days, people have been sending me emails about, oh, did you see what Brandi Cruz... Oops, wrong one. Did you guys see what Brandi Cruz said about Sam's piece? Jack, did you see what Brandi Cruz said? Now, I don't know Brandi personally. I've worked with Brandi, I think, a couple of times, but I kept getting these emails. Did you see what Brandi said about... Brandi said this, and then she was critical of Sam's work, and then she said this, and I thought, yeah, that's what... That's what political commentators do, is they're critical of other people's work. I don't really see what the big deal is.
They give their opinions. We give our opinions.
Yeah, yeah. I think that people don't necessarily understand that, like, this is the world that we traffic in, is opinions. And so when one of my contemporaries has an opinion about a certain piece, it doesn't really make any difference to me. Like, John wasn't necessarily the biggest fan of Sam's piece. It doesn't really make any difference to me. John and I were able to talk about it because that's what you do when you traffic in the political government conversation, right? It's
sure.
just kind of what happened.
Yeah.
So then I got this clip. Somebody sent this to me, and they said that Brandy thought that she had hurt somebody's feelings here at Cairo Radio. Here's what that sounded like.
You know, we criticized Cairo Radio for their coverage of We Heart Seattle, which I thought was incredibly unfair and unnecessary scrutiny for We Heart. I hurt some feelings at Cairo Radio. Sorry to hear that. It doesn't change anything that I had to say about the reporting.
How dare she? How dare she hurt my feelings?
Okay.
I talked to Sam and I said, Sam, were your feelings hurt by what Brandy said? And he goes, no. So this is what I think that people do all too often is they want to see like a flame war between, you know what I mean? They want to see like the fight or whatever. They want to see me being like, don't criticize my friend, Brandy. But like in actuality, I think like at least just from my perspective, criticism is a healthy thing. Like Sam's piece has mm-hmm. criticism in it.
Yeah.
And then other people are criticizing his piece.
Yeah, yeah.
And then we are all better as a result of that, right?
Yeah, we're talking about a topic that needs to be discussed.
It doesn't really have anything to do with like feelings. And when you're trafficking in the political commentary game, this is what you sign up for. Whether you're a journalist or a commentator or a program director or a board op, Andrew, I'm looking at you. You are subjected to a lot of criticism. Like, this is what we get paid to do.
Yeah.
And quite honestly, like, if you look at anybody like Tucker Carlson or you look at Hannity or any of these, you know, guys out there who are talking about politics, we do this to contribute to the overall conversation, not so that our feelings can be saved or so that people give us praise, although that's a nice side aspect to this.
Yeah, and there are elements or lanes in our industry that go to make people angry. That's their whole job. They go to make people feel like they're in the same boat as I am and we're all under attack and we're in this together and I call it like I see them.
Right.
And that's cool. That's part of the game. There's a lot of clubs in the golf bag, for an analogy, right?
Yeah, but my analysis of it was that I just kept getting these emails from people that were like, don't you care about what Brandy said? And my thought was like, not really. I mean, I've worked with Brandy a couple of times. I've had nothing but enjoyable experiences with Brandy.
Mm-hmm. The delight.
I'm friends with Nicole Thompson, who's Brandy's producer. I texted her on Wednesday and I said, hey, how's it going? I heard Brandy was critical of the thing. She goes, yeah, Brandy did a whole thing about it. Like behind the scenes, what you have are people who are contemporaries in an industry. Like, for example, Spike made a terrible joke one time about, what was it, KVI?
Oh, yeah.
Spike made a terrible joke, and then Ari Hoffman got really upset, shot Ari Hoffman an email, and I said, hey, bud, listen, super sorry about, you know, all that jazz.
The remnants of Spike's rock radio career. he's working on getting better and realizing where he's sitting every day, and then, it's a journey.
And Ari sent me back a very nice email expressing his feelings, and he's got an open invitation to come on the show.
Yeah.
But the point is like, I think that as a consumer, it's important to be wary, or it's important to be aware of when a narrative is being formed around a circumstance between commentators, because that is part of the game.
Yeah,
that
exactly.
is part of the overarching thing that some commentators do, where they are trying to either pit groups against each other, or they're trying to make it seem as if you're on team A, whereas then you're on team B, when in actuality, like behind the scenes, like I like G. Scott personally.
Uh-huh.
I don't agree with his political opinion. I like him as a person. I like Ursula Roitin. I like the people that I work with. It has nothing to do with feelings or hurting people's feelings or you made this piece and so therefore it's somehow like unworthy of criticism. Everything that comes out of my mouth is worthy of criticism.
Mm-hmm.
Every concept that we share as commentators is worthy of criticism. And I would encourage everybody to be highly critical of what I say, Sam's piece, whatever it is, without worrying about hurting anybody's feelings. Because this isn't the feelings business. This is the talk game. And in the talk game, you're going to get your feelings hurt every once in a while.
And to Sam, he's having maybe the best week of his life.
Oh, he's having a great time.
when people ask questions about his piece, are critical of his piece, have strong opinions about his piece,
yeah.
he's done his job as a journalist. Yeah, I mean, well, straight down the road. That's exactly what Sam set out to do.
I mean, that's what journalists do, yes. Right? Like, we, as commentators and as journalists, the job is to make people think. The job is to show people an idea or a concept and share it with them. And that is where the true joy of doing this business comes from. And to all the people who sent me emails that were like, aren't you going to say anything about Brandy? I will say this about Brandy Cruz. Every interaction I've had with her, she has been sweet and kind, yeah, and thoughtful.
Agreed.
And I refuse to engage in any kind of flame war nonsense because it's silly and it would potentially ruin any kind of discourse I could possibly have with somebody over something as trivial as I didn't like that piece for reasons X, Y, and Z. And is there a more stupid reason to attack somebody than other than them saying, I didn't like your piece? Is that, you know what I mean? It's kind of like, why do it? Like, why go through all the effort and all the emotional energy to like paint that picture for people when in actuality, like, I like everybody that I work with.
I'm with you.
I want to continue to have healthy relationships with the people who I work with as contemporaries. And so that's why I stray away from the drama aspect of being a political figure, because it just doesn't, it's not my bag. It's not what I do.
Right? When I got into this industry, I was 26 years old.
And you were a jerk.
I was a total bag.
Yeah.
I mean, I was. And I had a vehemently, I had a really hate-based relationship with a compatriot across the street at a different radio station for like a dozen years. Right. And this character on the air was very outspoken, very caustic, real abrasive, funny as all get out. And then I actually got a chance, as you often do in this business, to cross the street and work with different people. We worked in the same building for 5 years, me and this performer in Seattle. Wonderful. I fell in love with this person. And I realized at that time, okay, I was angry and resentful and didn't like this person because they were so good at what they were doing. I mean, they were good at their job. To Brandy Cruz's credit, she's good at her job.
She has a great show. She has a great job.
You've got a passionate opinion about a piece, Sam wrote. Well done, Brandy.
Yeah.
Seriously, that's your gig.
Could you imagine if I was like, if the ethos on this show was, don't be critical. Don't allow criticism.
We're going to have to get rid of the text line.
I know, geez, right there. Right? Like, criticism.
Lord's job just got easier.
Criticism is good. Criticism is healthy. And anybody who says that in any way, shape, or form this is a feelings business is totally wrong about it.
The only thing I would disagree with is criticism that the piece should not have been reported, I think.
Oh, well, that's if I could offer Brandy some criticism, that's a trash opinion. in all due respect. Like,
great, that'll be the one thing that gets clipped out of this whole
20 minutes. She's going to clip that one thing. No, what I'm saying is that everything is worth investigating.
There
everything
you go.
Is worth looking into.
Yes.
Whether it's the Stop the Sweeps people that we looked into,
right,
or whatever it might be. Like, why did I have Nicole Thomas Kennedy on the night show back when she was running for Seattle City's attorney? She wasn't going to win. Why would I have her on? Because that's what we do. We investigate and we think and we talk.
We're in journalism. Our duty is to inform people.
All right. I got nothing but love for Brandy and Nicole, but if they clip that, and that's the only context, there's another 9 minutes to go behind it. All right, we'll take a really quick break. We'll be right back after this. What's behind the outrageous rise in Washington car insurance rates? Spike O'Neill knows because I don't drive cars. We'll find
and you're
out.
A lucky man.
We'll talk about that when we get back right after this. So, car insurance rates, it affects everybody, except for me, because I don't drive, because I value human life so much that I choose to not get behind the wheel of a car, right? And I think it's just better for everybody and the country if I don't drive. So, what's behind the outrageous rise in Washington car insurance rates? Spike, I first saw this on the Seattle subreddit.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody posted that over a calendar year, their insurance rates went from like 226 to 475, mm-hmm, to 775.
Yeah.
Just
three bumps in 1 year.
Boom, boom, boom,
yeah,
boom,
a lot of people seeing that.
And they were like, why is this the case? Now, Spike, you own enough cars to start a used car dealership that you park all over your street.
Well, I own 9 vehicles that run. only 3 that we insure and drive on a regular basis.
Wait. That's a rich man, poor man. Adam Carolla.
Is it really?
That's a rich man, poor man. You have 9 cars that run, and the rest of them are currently under repair.
Under repair. They're under restoration.
Adam Carolla used to do this bit. It was one of
really?
His best bits. It was called Rich Man, Poor Man, and it was things that only happen but if you're very, very poor or very, very wealthy.
Okay.
It was basically like a revision of You Might Be a Redneck.
Okay.
But like, that's a, so the best one was outdoor shower. You're either very, very poor.
Right, or you got it tiled.
Or you're very, very wealthy.
Or you got a hose and a
bucket.
Nine
cars that run and three that are under repair, that is rich man, poor man.
Under restoration. Again,
exactly.
And we only insure three. And actually, to be completely fair, we only insure two because our youngest is back at college, and we insure for the 3 months that they're off school.
Oh, right? Sorry. Wait, so I thought you were going to say you let them drive an uninsured car.
No. Well, no, if you want to know why your rates are going up, it's because the state insurance commissioner approved a request for a 25% increase from last year to this year for state's auto insurers. About 20 different companies insure basically all the cars in Washington. Now, there's a bunch of reasons for this. Cars are more expensive. Repairs are more expensive. Right, I mean, working on cars is more expensive. There's a supply chain issue with repair shops, right? It costs more to repair your car when cars get hit than as insurance works, you know, insurance isn't based on just you alone. It's the industry rising costs.
Yeah.
The insurance companies have to turn a profit. They have to, you know, they insure everybody so that the one big massive hit they take doesn't bankrupt them. They spread the cost out over everybody. So there's all these factors coming in. We've had more fatal accidents than ever. People are speeding more than ever. So every time somebody's rate goes up, every time somebody's incident goes up, everybody's rate goes up.
A lot of people are getting booster shots out there, Spike. They're getting those COVID booster shots, and then they die suddenly behind the wheel of a car. You know what I'm talking about. I'm reading between the lines here, Spike. I'm crazy enough to say it. I might get fired for saying this because I'm crazy enough to say this.
Well, you can blame Biden if you want.
We all know that the demon squid shots that get into your body, they cause turbo cancer and turn you into a horse person, and then you die.
Well, first off, your right foot gets heavier, and you lean on the gas pedal all the time. And your peripheral vision shuts down, and you don't see the guy in the next lane. You take his lane.
That's when Jacob told me today that he was going to go get the crowd control. What is it? The population control jab today. I said, Jacob, you better not come in here shedding virus all over the place. I'm going to have to bring my hazmat suit in on Monday.
Booster nine.
He's going to be shedding virus all over the place. So, Spike, as someone who drives a car, does this affect you financially?
Yeah, our rates went up. We found out when our bank statement came in and the auto pay we have on our insurance to get a little bit of a break.
Mm-hmm.
It was like $200 more this month than last month. Jeez. And we haven't had any incidents. You know, I stopped speeding. I stopped riding in the HOV lanes.
Stopped eating and driving.
Let's not ask for miracles.
Yeah, yeah.
Laura, it affects everybody who drives, man.
Laura, have your car insurance rates gone up?
A little bit, but not significantly. But okay. I drive a very old car, although people who also drive old cars were referenced in this article.
Right. And so...
Yeah, because inflation means car repair.
Someone else was driving
more.
CRV from the 2000s and said that their rate went up.
Well, I don't like it, and I'm mad, and I think it should go away. That's my entire...
Thank you for fighting for us.
You're welcome.
I'm fighting
for you guys.
Yeah.
You know, the thing about this show is that I'm fighting for... I'm keeping government accountable, right? That's my job here in this position. I'm going out there and I'm making sure that the big guys in Olympia who are listening to this show all the way through all 3 hours, they know that I'm talking about them and I'm looking out for the little guy.
And you don't even have a car in the game. You're doing this out of love for the people.
Exactly.
Awesome.
Exactly.
It means a lot, Jack, more than you know.
I'm truly an American hero, and anybody that says otherwise is a fascist. We'll take a really quick break when we get back. Speaking of fascism, by the way, that's a bad segue. Donald Trump suggests that Biden was higher than a kite on cocaine at the State of the Union address. That happened 8 weeks ago. Thanks for your hot take, Donnie.
Well, no, Donnie said, I'll debate him, but I want him to fill a cup first. I swear.
Biden is touring the collapsed Baltimore Bridge for the photo op, but also because, you know, he's got to be there because he's the president. The White House pushes for an extension of internet program aiding many Washingtonians. If you don't know this, internet for a lot of the state is subsidized by the federal government.
Yep.
I think it should continue. We'll talk about it when we get back right after this.